This is The Mountain Life. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. Well, today's storm may have everyone racing for the chairlifts. We're turning our attention to another heartbeat of a true ski town, cross-country skiing. From the world stage at the Milan Cortina Winter Games to the trails right here in Park City, one thing is clear, you don't need a massive snow year to glide, but you do need snow. As Nordic skiing surges in popularity, so does the conversation about its future. So we've invited two legends of the Wasatch back to join us, Charlie Sturgis, founder of White Pine Touring and longtime executive director of Mountain Trails Foundation, and Dave Hanscom, longtime director of Wasatch Citizen Series, and quite possibly the most devoted, longtime cross-country skier in the Wasatch Back. I might add that they're both in the state of being retired at this point. Charlie and Dave, welcome to the Mountain Life. It's so great to have you.
Thanks, Lynn.
Good morning, Lynn. Glad to see you made it in.
Yeah. Well, it was a challenge, and I know there are plenty of people, hopefully, in their cars right now listening to the radio and getting the updates on the traffic. I will tell you, I came down the mine road, and it was bad coming down and up, and I think they closed it, actually, for upbound traffic. But it's kind of a funny day to talk cross-country skiing, but, you know, as I said in the intro, it's an integral part of being a true ski town. And I think if you look around the country at ski resort towns, you know, most of them have some semblance of cross-country skiing. And Charlie, this is really near and dear to your heart. Why do you think it's so important that we continue to support and encourage and grow the sport?
Well, there's probably a number of good reasons. If we look at it from maybe an economic point of view, cross-country skiing is one of the most asked about amenities when picking an alpine ski area. So that's pretty good. And it also at this point is one of the fastest growing segments of skiing in general. So those are two pretty good reasons, right? But the best reason, and sometimes you can see it in how the Euros do in their race results, is cross-country skiing is really a fundamental way of starting to learn to move on skis and to really be upright and in balance and be able to glide. Sometimes I think of it like yoga and swimming outdoors, right? You're standing on these little things and you're getting a high heart rate. And also the sport can be enjoyed at any level, right? So you don't have to be out there kicking butt. You can just be out cruising in the woods. And alpine skiing doesn't really allow for that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also, I mean, we were talking before we went on air on what a lifetime sport it is. And so I have to turn here to Dave Hanscom, who's been cross-country skiing longer than a lot of us have been alive. And it's not to say that you aren't still really young, Dave, but... You know what?
I've only been skiing 80 years. Come on.
Oh, and you know, you've raised two boys who are wonderful athletes and great cross-country skiers. Now your grandkids are great skiers. What do you think? What is that thing for you, that magic that keeps you, you know, a Nordic enthusiast?
Just as an interlude here, my son and his son, my grandson, are skiing the Berkey on Saturday.
Oh,
along
wow.
with his daughter and wife. So
that's great. And the
tradition continues.
The Berkey Biner, for those who don't know, is?
Yeah, the Berkey Biner is a long race, you know, 50 kilometer race in Wisconsin that's been going on forever. I don't know, 50 years maybe. But it's modeled after the Norwegian Berkey Biner, which is been going in Norway for centuries. So
yeah, well.
Anyway, I think the answer to your question is, you know, being outdoors has always been something that I've loved doing, and exercising while I was outdoors makes it even better, and I'm thankful I can still do that. But that's, you know, it's a great combination.
Yeah, and the reason that you can still do it is because you've been building on that fitness your whole life. And I think that that's what a lot of people are turning to cross-country skiing, because they realize it's this full body exercise. It's not high impact. You don't often get injured, although we did see Jesse Diggins get injured, didn't we, in the Olympics. But, you know, it's rare, and it's good for your joints, it's good for your muscles, and it's good for your cardiovascular.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's certainly part of the reason why I've maintained my health and ability to go up and down the mountains summer and winter. But when I was a trail runner, I'd beat myself up on the trails in the summer. You know, not intentionally, but in the wintertime, I'd quit running and just cross-country ski for 4 or 5 months, and I'd start running again in the spring, and I was in better shape for running even in the spring than I was the previous fall.
Yeah, exactly. And Charlie, you were talking earlier about a report you heard on the radio this morning on NPR.
It ties into what Dave is saying. You know, they were talking about sports with high VO2 max, right? And they were saying that cross-country skiing is the greatest VO2 max uptake of any sport, I guess, in the wintertime. Let's just be, I'm right on that.
Is
that,
it's year round.
So anyhow, the observation is, or the statement from the guy who was making the report was basically, every part of your body is being used, and consequently you're using up more oxygen. So unlike sitting on a bike and stuff, you know, right? And or maybe certainly alpine skiing has a very, very low VO2. Maybe if you do it really high levels, it's better. But anyhow, so it is an incredible sport in the fact that your body's under demand to work to be able to perform the sport.
Right. And, you know, full disclosure here, you two are not just Nordic skiers. I mean, you do it because you have these other sports that you love. Dave Hanscom, you wrote the book on touring the Wasatch, you know, backcountry ski tours. And Charlie, you are a longtime alpine skier, backcountry skier, and rock climber. And I know that Nordic skiing must, you know, inform your fitness for those sports, right, Dave?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
You know, I used to sort of joke that I trained, you know, down at White Pine, right, during the week so that I could ski tour and I could race. And if I was racing, then I could ski tour hard, right? Yeah. So it's just kind of like this progression. You know, you just stayed in training mode. And when we went backcountry skiing for 8-10 hours at a time, you really felt pretty good the whole time.
Mm. One thing I've observed throughout my longtime love of cross-country skiing is, especially in Europe, where you see, I mean, it's such a lifestyle for so many different generations, you know, from little kids to, I love when I see the 80-plus-year-old, maybe 90-plus-year-old guys out there in the races, in these marathon ski races with their kind of saggy one-piece Lycra suit from the 80s, and they are just going, and, you know, it's all about the fun, the camaraderie, the meal at the end of the race, and, you know, and just it's a lifestyle, yeah. So, Dave, you raced for a long time, and also, you were the director of the Wasatch Citizen Series until just a few years ago.
Yeah, I still enter races, but I don't race anymore. I ski in the races.
Yeah, you just make it to the finish line.
One of my favorite moments last winter, my son Brett and grandson Levi, who was in the Junior Nationals, actually, at Soldier Hollow last year.
Wow.
We're in a Wasatch Citizen Series race, so we had three generations, and we all won our age group.
Oh, that's great. I didn't hear that story.
Of course, it's easy for me, because I was the only one in the age group, but you got to outlast them when you get to be 80-plus.
That's right, and you don't even have to tell the rest of the story that you were the only one in the age group, because you have earned first place. Moving into kind of a discussion about what's gone on this year with cross-country skiing, like alpine skiing, it's been a disappointing year, until today.
Yeah, exactly.
And hopefully that means all of the cross-country ski resorts around, or areas, will be back in business. But it takes some real creativity, doesn't it, Charlie? And you were the director of the White Pine Touring Center for a while, and you know, a long time. You've been involved for a long time, but what does it take to keep snow? And what has it taken this winter?
This year, I'd say, first off, the big principle about white pine and snow is it's all about keeping the white side up. It has nothing to do with depth of snow. It does a little bit in terms of regulations on the golf course and whatnot, and practical things like that. But these guys this year, Richard and his crew, and I think Mountain Trails and their crew, and certainly a little more snow up high, but Richard and his crew managed to keep 3K going with just a delicate, sensitive touch. You know, and that's really just to be able to resurface it. No, imagine just sanding a table or something, right? Just enough to make it skiable again and, you know, make it at least a surface that is somewhat fun. It may not be perfect, but still you can get out on it, have a good time, and not have it be a hazard.
Yeah, and as we've seen in Predazzo, where the cross-country ski events are taking place for the Milan Cortina Olympics, they don't have much snow either. But in contrast to what we do here, which has been a lot of either, you know, loading snow on tarps and moving it over to the track, or sometimes snow blowing what we have onto the track, they make snow there. And they, you know, you've told me the stories, and I've seen the mountains of snow that are, you know, made when it's cold enough, and then they bring it to the track.
You know, if you're paying attention in the cross-country races, if you look at the backgrounds, there's basically no snow.
Yeah.
So you imagine, and you look at the track, you go, wow, that track's like 4 feet thick. They made a lot of snow. And I have to say just quickly, you know, when I went to the Marcia Longa in Italy a long time ago, there was no snow basically for about 30-some kilometers of the track. And the Italian army came in and plowed down these giant mounds of man-made snow, and the next day we skied a race. It was amazing.
And they lay it down through the towns and everything, kind of like in the Birkebeiner in Wisconsin. They do that too, just through the towns
when
at the last minute.
This year will be fine, but Soldier Hollow does exactly that. I mean, we've raced, you know, our Citizen Series races have been moved over there because that's the only snow in Utah for us to race on. And maybe they only have 3 kilometers. They have more than that now, but they keep making snow. But so what? It works.
That's right.
You just go around more times.
You get dizzy. Do you ever have to unwind and start going around the opposite way?
Yeah.
So, you know, you mentioned something, Charlie, that strikes me, that it's a national passion. You know, in Italy, the army comes out to help put snow on the trails. And passion for a sport is what keeps it alive. There's a lot of passion here for cross-country skiing. I see people walking up, up and ski up in Bonanza Flat, because that's all there has been, and that's wonderful. Are we going to need to move these trails higher, do you think, over the week, we have an Olympics coming up in 34?
Well, you can't really move it higher for the Olympics, right? So, and as you well know, skiing at that level isn't really great for everybody, at least the first time or two you're up there. You're skiing at 9,000 feet is different aerobically.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's not the case. I mean, hopefully we can come up with good solutions for maintaining and building tracks down low. And whether that requires, you know, even some partial snowmaking, like imagine a golf course having had some availability to man-made snow. Would that have stayed? And the answer is pretty much yes, it would, right? Mm-hmm. So, if they could have maintained 3 or 4 Ks just of man-made, that would have been terrific.
Yeah. I'm seeing more and more people who come to cross-country skiing because they feel safer. As we talked about, it's a pretty safe sport. You don't have, the danger that sometimes you encounter an alpine resorts of someone else hitting you, or you hitting someone else, I suppose. And so, you know, there's a whole sector of the ski economy that comes with families, and they don't ski because they don't want to go on the hill. And so how have you guys seen that evolve over the time you've been cross-country skiing, Dave?
Yeah, I see it certainly, you know, when I'm out on the golf course. But, I mean, Charlie's the one that's when he was running White Pine, would see it all the time. And Richard today, families coming in and enjoying getting out on the snow and maybe learning. Maybe they've never cross-country skied before. And it's, you know, it's a great way for them to get out.
Yeah, and when you're bringing the grandparents along with you, I've seen that. You know, the next generation, or maybe you want your kids to learn how to alpine ski, but you know, you've been injured and your knee's still half injured and you'd rather try another sport, huh?
Well, it's also very expensive to be an alpine skier these days. So entering the cross-country world is really pretty user-friendly in terms of cost. So you can get, you know, there's good school programs. The YSA does a terrific job. There certainly was the Kickers and Gliders, you know, program as well out of UOP. So all these things have offered, you know, much low-cost, a much better low-cost alternative to alpine skiing.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the people who've grown up in this program here. I mean, Rosie Brennan, prime example. She's on the U.S. women's cross-country team. She's in Italy right now. She's competed in that exciting relay, and she's, you know, she's a star. She grew up here in Park City.
Yeah, I met Rosie like the day after she was born. So I've known her mom and dad for a long time. But, you know, she started in Kickers and Gliders at, I don't know, 7 years old, I think was, you know, probably the low age for Kickers and Gliders in those days. And then, you know, has basically built a career through cross-country skiing. She skied for Dartmouth, and then she basically went on to be on the U.S. ski team. And this is her third Olympics, I believe.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And then a whole host of other people who have grown up in the Kickers and Gliders. I think of Leah Lang, who went on to ski at the University of Utah. Sydney Palmer Ledger, who is, I think, on the U.S. ski team currently.
I don't know if she is this year, but she did ski the World Cup circuit 2 years ago, but I didn't see that name this year. And, you know, there's reasons not to come back to it at times. It's very stressful.
Yeah.
You know, so it's there are reasons not to keep showing up for races. And, so anyhow, yeah, and, you know, Wendy Wagner, who sadly passed away recently, you know, I can remember skiing with her and her parents when she was 8, 9 years old, whatever, yeah.
Right.
And, yeah, so we've produced a number of good athletes, and we've also had good talent here, you know, with John Callahan and Ingrid Butts and Joan Getchow, you know, was off the Olympics, right? And they all worked at White Pine and coached and whatnot, and I'm sure there's a few I'm forgetting. But anyhow, yeah, we've had good talent here, and we've been able to also, you know, keep them really busy. This is White Pine Touring is a extremely busy cross-country center in comparison to others in the U.S.
Yeah. Also, I was reading somewhere along the line when we were talking about how Park City Municipal supports that endeavor on their municipal golf course, that it is very rare, in fact, almost never, that a municipality has the venue. And that's something that we can look at as unique.
Yeah, I would say it came with a little bit of a struggle here and there. I certainly can remember, and I know Dave can remember, you know, back in the days of Steve Erickson, Jim Miller, that it was rather contentious in the 80s. And when I came up here, it was still pretty contentious. But, you know, using the golf course in the wintertime is, of course, an excellent use of an asset that the city owns. And just mitigating some of the issues, whether it was killing any grass or whatever, you know, most of it was, the concern was greens and tees areas, which pretty much, you know, over time, everybody learned to avoid them and came up with some reasonable ways of managing it. And yeah, I mean, today it's a pretty good relationship that the golf course and the city, White Pine and the city have. So
I think over the years, the golf course people have realized that really they're playing golf on a cross-country ski area, so so things are going well right now.
Well, yeah. I'll agree with you, Dave. For the hundreds of times I've been over there on that course skiing, the first time I golfed was the summer before last. And it was such a bizarre concept, you know, learning where the greens were and the holes and the, you know. But, yeah, so much for
golfing. I was golfing over there when it was a nine-hole course.
Ah.
And the one of the holes went up to where first-time lift is now. So I've golfed there for a long time.
Wow, that's a different layout for sure.
Yeah.
So what would be the call to action of this community if you were to have a magic wand, Charlie, and ask this community to, you know, is it make snow or truck some snow down from Park City Resort, just, you know, right there? Or
I think
or
this
what
would be
it
a
be?
Tough year to talk them into loaning us any snow. the big deal, you know, actually talking about snowmaking, it wouldn't necessarily be that complicated, but water is more complicated, and so obtaining water. But if snowmaking and water were available, that'd be a great place to start on at least a 4 or 5K loop so that you kind of knew you were good to go. Yeah. And, you know, because of our unpredictable track here, you know, the ability to set a track, you know, we have no races here anymore, basically, unless it's on the farm, which is really, in some respects, disappointing. I mean, we had the relay races, we had the Utah Winter Games races. I was thinking about it the other day, we held, I think, 5 marathons at White Pine Touring.
Wow.
Yeah, imagine that.
With carpets across the street. From the 5K to the 3K loop.
Yeah.
Oh,
covered
wow.
with snow.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wonderful. So a ski marathon has to be at least, what, 30?
42 kilometers.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, so anyhow, it's really at this point, I think, maximizing the relationship between all the entities. I mean, everybody pitches in some and the job gets done, right? And you know, you look at what's going on in Round Valley with Mountain Trails and the ability, the city allowing and also contributing some, I'm not sure how much, but all the road basing that got done out there, mm-hmm. so that there's a flat underlying surface, so when we have a bad year like this year or last year, right, they were able to do set a track on the minimal amount of snow out there.
Yeah.
So that's a huge deal. And being able to groom up in Bonanza Flat, that's a wonderful use of the resource. I'm, of course, pushing for more transit trails, more frequent. But it shows just a great relationship between the municipality and the concierge, right? Or concessionaire, I'm sorry, concierge. Such as White Pine Touring, you know. So, we just got to keep doing it and adjust to the future.
Yeah.
And I just read in the paper that the golf course is planning a total redo over the next couple of years. And it seems like what an ideal time to incorporate into their plan for the golf course, or for our cross-country ski area, I should say, a better situation for a year like this for cross-country skiing. And whether that involves snowmaking or not, or whether it involves modifying the terrain just enough so it's not tipping into the sun, it's more shady, and you know, some of those places don't melt out as quickly.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I hope that you make that along with that consultant that's coming to look at. I'm sure the golf course consultant isn't also a cross-country.
Well, but he should be.
Yeah,
I don't know if anybody in the cross-country community has been consulted, but they should be. And neither of us has been, certainly.
Can they also take out that one really hard hill on the 5K?
There are no hard hills at White Pine. Come on.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah. If you watch the good guys, they just double pull up that, so
exactly.
It's no big deal then.
Exactly. Oh, so much to aspire to. Well, we're about out of time here. Were there any other burning topics that we didn't get to?
You know, we really didn't cover, you know, history in one sense, but, you know, the origins of White Pine, just for the listener, is White Pine Canyon. And it was Steve and Jim Miller, actually, up there in teepees. And I think Dave, you'll probably remember this too, but we had raced where the Cabriolet parking lot is. And we had raced all the way down White Pine on the side of the road and all the way back up to Park West and over the Red Pine. And since then, They moved into the golf course at 81, and we had 9Ks of track, right, total. And now we have almost 70 kilometers of track in town, and most of it is actually no fee.
Yeah.
And we've done a great job of adjusting to everybody's needs, dog free, dog, you know, dogs on, dogs off, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's really been spectacular to see.
Yeah, so keep the support going.
Keep the support going and just keep it at the front of everyone's mind, you know, so let's not be forgotten.
Yeah.
Yeah, we raced for 45 years on Park City Golf Course.
Wow.
Starting back in the late 70s.
That's the Wasatch Citizen Series, the longest running race series, I think, in the country.
December 23rd, 1979 was the first race.
You were just a spring chicken then, Dave. You probably won everything, too. Yeah.
Probably. No, actually, Steve Erickson was the man back then.
Oh,
Ken McCarthy.
Yeah, Ken McCarthy.
Ken wasn't around then. Yeah. Oh, John Glidden was the other one.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Well, Dave Hanscom, Charlie Sturgis, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for coming in to advocate for the sport that you love so well and that, again, is a crucial part of this community.
Thanks, Lynn.
Yeah, thanks for giving us time and for supporting cross-country skiing.
Absolutely. Now let's go skiing.
Damn right.